And welcome back to issue 0 of Behind the Panels, also known as issue 41 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's about as regular as a Kevin Smith book.
No, I guess we'll never have him on the show.
I'm one of your trembling co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your terrified other co-host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
Good, and surprisingly live.
Yeah, we're together in a studio, like touching knees.
Those of you, you've probably noticed a few technical issues the last few episodes.
Not as many as there actually were.
David covers them with his technical wizardry, but we have Skype issues, so I've actually decided to come out to David's place today so we can do this live. Also, let us start with a big, big apology.
Absolutely.
It has been a couple of weeks since the last time we did this. And a lot's been going on. It's one of those things, I think John Lennon put it nicely, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me fill people in a bit. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit on the Film Actually show, which is now in hiatus, people will have noticed. Geek Actually is going to take a break. Now, how that affects this show, we'll come back to in a minute. But we're taking our shows on hiatus for a couple of months until the new year. We're going to just take that time to restructure, come back with some new shows, come back strong, basically. We've been doing it for 4 years. We're a little tired. And then just in the last few weeks, my wife's father fell very ill into hospital. She's been jetting backwards and forwards between states. And it's just all gotten too hard. Life has just gotten in the way.
Absolutely.
And then you got sick at one point and everything just got in the way. And that's why this has been so erratic. And it just kind of last weekend was kind of an epiphany where I just kind of went, we need to take a break. We just need to not try and force this to happen. Yeah. We want quality. So we're going to take a couple months off of the network, and there will be occasional, and as I said on the Film Action Show, there will be occasional stuff going up. We still want to do occasional specials.
Yeah.
So on the film side of things, like when The Hobbit comes out, we'll definitely have to do a Hobbit show because it's The Hobbit, for God's sake, you know? We can't miss that. And as weird as this sounds, when Twilight comes out, we will do a Twilight special because we have done a Twilight special every single film. We can't. We've got to finish it.
If that deep in, you got to keep.
You just got to finish it. I mean, as much as we just makes my teeth hurt, but we got to finish it anyway. So there will be occasional specials. Now, how it's going to affect this show is we're going to continue doing this show, but we're going to move it to like a comic book cycle. We're going to move it to monthly. So for the next couple of months, we don't know what's going to happen in the new year. When we've worked out the whole restructure, the show might change again. But just so that there's still stuff coming out, we're going to go monthly. So it'll be the first weekend of every month, starting from the first weekend of November. So this episode, the next episode will be November. And what are we doing for that show?
Well, we'll talk about it a bit more later, but we're doing The Dark Knight Returns. That is a user request, that one.
Absolutely. So we'll talk a little bit more about why we're doing that at the end of this show. Because there's been an event that has happened, which is just fantastic. But we'll come back to that. So that explains why we've been erratic, and it also explains what's going to happen in the future. So for those who have been texting me or like emailing me and Facebooking me saying, where's the show? This is what's happening. All right. So we're not disappearing. We're just going to take a hiatus for a little bit of time just to try and restructure everything up. I think we're all just a little bit burnt out.
The truth is we're not actually talking anymore. You've edited me in later from earlier shows.
That's right. And the other thing we're going to do about this show is that for panels anyway, I think it's probably going to be live in studio pretty much from now on.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll be like sitting side by side and actually it helps with the conversation.
Yeah.
Because this is a much more conversational show than anything else we do, because we are talking about feelings about a comic book, it helps if we can look at each other when we're actually doing it.
And the other good thing about going monthly is this has always been a book club show. That's always been our intention. So, you know, to actually give you time to read the books, because we've done some pretty big books.
Yes.
And
we've struggled getting through the books.
Yeah. I mean, this time we actually read an entire universe of books. So, you know, getting through that weekly, in addition to all those other things that life
And it would be nice that, I mean, the monthly show would be nice to be able to say, oh, look, let's have a look at New Mutants, which is like 60 issues or something like that, and say, we can actually do that
in a month. It's easy, yeah.
You know? So we can actually cover the greater story arcs and stuff like that. So I think it's going to work well for
That's why we're doing all 700 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. No.
No, Richard. Okay. No, just because we make the show further apart doesn't mean we expand the size.
Welcome to the new yearly behind.
We're going to read every DC comic book ever written, and we'll put it out in the show. All right. With all that being said, boy, it was nice playing music in as well. It's kind of, we can't do that on Skype. So there you go. All right. So what have we got this week?
Well, there's a couple of things that we
have. Actually, I should say, what have we got this month? Because
that's true. This month, in this issue, let's just say.
All right, that'll do.
Marvel gets pointy. An era comes to an end for Marvel as well. DC cancels the same series, and Alan Moore likes books. Then there's lots of Marvel movie news, plus our pick of the week, one we're very excited about, Guardians of the Freaking Galaxy.
Absolutely. Look, Dina, and this is a funny one, because this is a book that 5 months ago, we all kind of went, huh?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what the hell? You know, why is this such a big thing? And now I think we can honestly say we know why now, Kevin Feige, however you pronounce his name, we can understand.
Another person we would never have on the show.
No. Maybe he could come on the show and actually tell us how he pronounces his name. Yeah. But we can understand why he's been so excited about the cosmic universe.
We are now shoulder deep into this stuff. You
know? Yes.
That is how much we're in love with it. But first, it's been a while since I've been able to say this. But David, it's time for the Vintage Clip of the Week.
All right.
What's happening, Reed? An optical illusion?
That's no illusion, Ben. It's real. Whatever it is, it's growing larger.
You said it, Brain Trust. Look, the whole cotton-picking sky's on fire.
Let's go up to the observation platform.
Hey, look. The flames are gone, but now the sky is full of blinking rocks.
What do you make of it, Reed? Those things practically fill the sky.
It looks like some sort of floating orbiting space debris. But where did it come from? And what is it doing here?
Perhaps I can explain. Who's that?
Yikes!
I am the Watcher. I have caused these phenomena in the skies above Earth with my matter mobilizer. The Silver Surfer approaches. Silver Surfer? Who's he? He is the advanced scout for Galactus. Galactus who drains entire planets of their elements, then leaves them dry and barren. I could not let this happen. That is why I'm trying to conceal your planet from the Silver Surfer. Even as I speak, the Silver Surfer has reached your moon. Even though he cannot see Earth, he will grow suspicious of the floating space debris.
He's no longer our problem. We must prepare for Galactus.
Do you prepare it? I'm for Clark.
He went off. Got to grab him.
No. A mere fall cannot hurt the Silver Surfer. Our concern now is for Galactus. Look. Even now, his universe-spanning sphere approaches. Galactus has received the Silvery One signal.
The Silvery One? There is so much. did the space rocks give Reed Richards an elastic erection? What was
well,
that?
He can stretch every part of his body.
What was that sound effect? I hate to sound like a comic book nerd, but the Watcher doesn't get involved. That's the whole concept.
He's the Watcher.
He's the Watcher. It's like, I couldn't let that happen.
I am the Watcher, so I have acted.
Oh, dear God. And I love the fact he goes, it must be some sort of cosmic moon rocks. It's like, yeah, that's where my mind goes.
That was, of course, from the Fantastic Four 1960s TV series. An episode called Galactus. It was the first time.
No.
No,
really?
No. That was the first time they'd introduced both of the characters of Galactus and the Silvery One.
The Silvery One. That slippery Silvery One.
Who does actually turn up much later in the Guardians world. But it's all part of the same cosmic fabric.
Mm.
The cosmic ballet continues.
It's such a rich universe. We will get to that soon.
But first, what we've been reading. But I want to start with something that we haven't been reading, but rather we've been watching, because we're going to get into this.
Yes.
Obviously, we're going to do the book next month. But we've both seen part one of the Dark Knight Returns DC animated series. Oh,
no, it's really, really good. It is a really faithful adaptation. Oh. It is unbelievable how close it is.
Panel for panel, like character design to the same. I even love the fact like the newsreader has got the same sort of uneven earrings and pointy, you know, like.
I love that. Where it goes, late breaking news, Commissioner Gordon shot in. No, let me read that again.
Commissioner Gordon has shot.
Has shot. No, it is a really, really beautiful, and Peter Weller is doing such a good job. We actually had a trailer for it on an earlier show.
We did.
Go back and have a listen to that, or find the trailer online and have a look at it. It comes out on Blu-ray next month, in October.
Yeah, I think it comes out very late September, maybe even this week in the US, and first week October in Australia.
Yes, October 3rd, I think it is here.
Yeah, about that.
Well worth getting and having a look at. Oh. It is really great. I just, the only frustration I had about the entire thing was I'm waiting for part two.
Yeah, which we will have to wait, because there's a preview for part two on the disc, but it's still obviously in rough animation point at this stage. So it's not even a full trailer. It's actually interviews with the creators, which is almost as good. So yeah, definitely worth getting. I think it's, you know, one of the best Batman films of the last 10 years.
Yeah, I agree. It makes Dark Knight Rises pale.
Yeah.
You know, it really does. This is what Batman's all about.
And, you know, I mean, it's, I think it actually shows you how much has been lifted in Dark Knight Rises from that book. Because obviously the book has got a lot of the same sort of themes. Bruce Wayne having been away for a while, he's grown older, you know, he's coming back into a much changed Gotham. There's even lines that were used in Dark Knight Rises, you know, when the cops are there showing the young rookie, you're in for a hell of a show tonight, son. And that you were saying to me on the way over here, that scene when the lightning bolt hits, Batman's sailing over. It was in the trailers, but it's such an iconic scene.
As soon as I saw the lightning in the sky, I went, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes. And then you see him leaping through the sky with the lightning bolt, and it's the reaction from the cops on that as well. And it's just like this moment, and you just go, you get goosebumps, and you go, oh, that's it. That's what it's all about.
It was, such a faithful adaptation. As you said, the second half is a very different book. Because you've got, those of you who have read it, you've got Superman in there and one hell of a fight.
Yeah, and we bring Joker into it as well, and it's a much broader story the second time around. The second half of the book, the first half of the book is actually a very contained story. It's his return and the mutants and basically coming, trying to restore balance to Gotham.
It's almost as though, and we'll have to talk about this next month, of course, but that the first half is Frank Miller year one style, the second half is Frank Miller late 1980 style, you know. And it is two Frank Millers writing that book, and it works so well. Anyway, just some of the other stuff I've been reading, I'll just mention quickly, is I bought a hell of a lot. I'm just showing David a picture now of the massive section of books I got from Amazon.
That Thor looks good. But
the Thor that I got is an omnibus, which is, and go out and get these omnibuses if you can, because Marvel, in their infinite wisdom, put them out of print, and once they're out of print, they don't archive them at all, which is unfortunate. But that is the entire Walt Simonson run of Thor, which is where, a lot of people say is the definitive Thor run, Straczynski. And it's kind of where characters like Beta Ray Bill were introduced kind of thing. So definitely get that. It's a hell of a read. It's about most of these omnibus books are somewhere between 600 and 1,200 pages long. And they're huge books. It was a huge schlep home from the post office, let me tell you. The other one I've got in there is The Amazing Spider-Man.
How many issues is that?
It's a lot. It's a big book. And The Amazing Spider-Man is like the complete Todd McFarlane run on Amazing Spider-Man, which is amazing. Some of the other stuff I got there.
I saw you got Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man, they've been releasing these great, I think, 10, 12-issue hardcovers.
I want an omnibus of that.
Yeah.
The whole thing in one hardback.
DC do similar omnibus things. They also do the Absolute Editions, but all of Why the Last Man is 60 issues. So that would be a nice, big, thick one. And Fables, they're doing the same thing as well. I also bought Criminal, which was, and I haven't dipped into that yet, but that's Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Same team that's currently on Fatale, and they've worked together a lot. So keen to dip into that one as well. So I've been dipping into stuff like that, but most of my time has been occupied with this Guardians of the Galaxy run. We're going to talk about the extended things, the Thanos Imperative, which follows that up, some of the Nova issues that come along with that where it ties in. And now I've been catching up to some of the Zero issues as well, which I think we should talk about briefly.
Yeah, from DC Comics. That's what I've been reading over the last week in particular, is trying to catch up with a lot of the Zero issues. And quite frankly, a lot of them are hit and miss. I mean, it's I think there's probably three off the top of my head where I went, those are great. Those are what a Zero issue should be, this whole rebirthing. Because we've rebooted the
The whole universe.
We're kind of going back and retrofitting their origin stories into that universe. And so a lot of the Zero issues are those origin stories, mm-hmm. showing you where they came from. So the three off the top of my head that I actually really did enjoy, purely because I really enjoy the books too, and they're the ones that I follow. The New 52, quite frankly, I'm down to about 10.
Me too.
I'm about down to about 10 that I read religiously, and some of them I go and I kind of dip in here and there. But the out of the 10, the three Zeros so far that I've really enjoyed were Batgirl, which basically shows how Barbara Gordon got inspired to be Batgirl. And it's actually really, really interesting because it's all about how on a field trip to the police station, she already had a minor obsession with Batman. And while she's at the police station, it gets held hostage, and she puts on this mock-up bat costume that the police have been using to try and identify Batman.
Right.
She puts it on, so there's some body armor, and she beats the living crap out of the guy who's one of the leaders of the gang who's come in to take over the police station. And so it kind of leads her to believe, and then at the end of the issue, she meets Batman. And it's like he's like standing in front of her saying, "You show talent." You know what I mean? So kind of how she kind of came into that world. And so I quite liked that. And another one that I really liked was Supergirl, because we've kind of retrofit Supergirl into this New 52. And so it kind of is the issue is all about being on Krypton and how she got off and to get to
how
Earth.
Does Supergirl
get off? Not quite that. I can see your eyes already going at me when I'm saying that. How she got off the planet, and there's a rift between her father and Jor-El, so they weren't actually communicating with each other at that time because they had different ideas. Because it was something that's been touched on in Superboy about Krypton not enjoying cloning, and some of, I think it's Zor-El is her father or something like that. Anyway, basically, he was kind of involved in shadier science. And so Jor-El looked down on him, but he had followed Jor-El's experiments and research into the destruction of Krypton. So he knew it was going to happen. So he'd been taking steps to save his daughter. And so again, and the reason why in Supergirl we found the floating city of Kandor, which is where Supergirl's from, and she finds still intact, is because he had shielded, because his plan was to send her off in this pod, and Kandor, he had built a shield around, and he'd used it as basically weather experiments and stuff like that, but it was really so that when the planet blew up, Kandor would survive. It didn't work. The city did survive, but everybody died still, as we know from reading that Supergirl issue from, I think it was like issue 3 or 4. It was a failed experiment, and she was supposed to come back and come back to Kandor after it was all done, but of course it didn't quite work out the way it was supposed to work out, so to speak. So I really enjoyed that. But I think, once again, the standout issue, as it has been with the 52 since the inception a year ago, has been Justice League.
Yeah, I've not read Justice League, but it is, I know basically what's happening in that. Another one I quickly want to touch on before you talk about that is
are similarities.
Yeah, similarities there. Is the Greek, I've been reading a lot of Guardians lately. Is the Green Lantern stuff. And the main Green Lantern book. Not all the offshoot ones. This is the main Green Lantern book. The Green Lantern annual that came out
was
amazing. And Green Lantern Zero picks up more or less where that left off, but introduces us to a new character, the very highly publicized Baz, who is...
I have a problem with the name, but that's okay.
Yeah. Who is... G'day, Baz. Baza. Who's not actually Bogan at all, but he's the first Arab-American superhero, first mainstream Arab-American superhero for DC Comics. And hell of an introduction.
Yes.
And I'm really keen to see, because I think he's a interesting character, even if he never put on the Green Lantern ring. Mm. And to give him a ring, to give him suddenly give him this huge power is an amazingly, amazing breadth of story that you can possibly go for there. And then, you know, coupled with the fact that Hal and Sinestro are off God knows where.
Without
power rings is going to be a hell of a run. Geoff Johns has been writing this book for years and years and years now, and it's a flawless example of how you do a universe-wide thing and create a great story within your own
set of
books.
I wish he had as much success with Aquaman.
Yeah.
Because Aquaman started so strong, and even though it's not a terrible book, and I still read it every month, it slipped into it's okay.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, and Geoff Johns is writing that as well, and it's like you kind of go, I just wish he'd kept that up, you know? Because it started so strong.
I think to me, I think his heart is still just with Lantern, because all of his other books, and he writes a lot of books, even Justice League, which is still pretty good, it's had its weak moments.
Yeah.
Whereas Lantern stayed pretty strong for the last 5 years. And we're talking about some of the biggest events in DCU.
Actually, I got it. But once again, like we discussed before the show, Lantern for me still, this new run of Lantern still has not been as strong.
No.
As what led up to the 52. The last 2 years.
How do you top, you know, the you know, Blackest Night, Brightest Day stuff? I mean, how do you top that?
No, you don't. And then, or the War of the Rings with the whole, the color rings and everybody getting about. I mean, it was epic in scope.
Yeah. Oh,
the whole thing has been epic in scope for 2 years. And then to reboot everything and kind of come into this new 52, awkwardly wedged in. Because the Green Lantern in Justice League doesn't match the Green Lantern who's in the Green Lantern books. It's kind of like the Green Lantern book didn't reboot. It just kind of continued on, but everything else rebooted around. It's been really awkwardly.
I mean, I'm glad it didn't because it was such a deep universe.
Yeah, and I was worried because when Justice League came out, Hal Jordan was a very different Hal Jordan.
Mm.
But it's like they've kind of kept them isolated. It's almost like they're two different worlds.
Which...
Yeah,
it's almost
like it's two different universes going on here. But let me talk about Justice League very quickly, because Justice League actually took a stray away, because we'd already seen the origin of the Justice League with issue 1 and 2 and so forth, with them all forming up. They've been hinting at this for a while, because in the last section of Justice League for the last 2 or 3 weeks, they've been doing Shazam and this Billy Batson comic books and how Shazam came about. And so with Justice League issue 1, they've just gone back and done an origin story of Shazam, basically, and something else, which we'll talk about in a minute, a reoccurring thing that has come back again. But the Shazam story arc is really interesting because in the original DC universe, Billy Batson was a pure boy, and the magician picked him because he was so pure and good and wholesome, and he was turned into Shazam, the ultimate Chesty Bonds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in this new universe... Basically,
he's a dick.
Well, he's a dick. Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, Billy Batson, but he's pure of heart. Mm. And this is one of the things that actually comes up in this book is the fact that the Council of Magic that condemned Pandora and the Phantom Stranger and so forth have all died. What we've got is we've got one wizard left who's now an old man and is dying and is desperately trying to find somebody to take on. As his new Shazam, because Black Adam apparently has returned. And he's pulling people in right, left, and center, and they're all proving not to be pure. And he needs a pure, good person to do this. And he pulls in Batson. And Batson, he goes, let me test you. And he goes, no, you're not pure. Because we show all these flashbacks from all these previous Justice Leagues. And he's saying, you're pure. And Batson just looks at him and goes, nobody is.
Yeah.
He goes, it's whether or not you can... Yeah. Be good is an issue. And the wizard goes, oh, really? Well, let me have a look at you then. And he has a look back on all the things that he did right. And he goes, maybe there is hope for you. And so bestows upon him all his powers and then dies. And so Billy Batson is now basically being given all this ultimate power. And he's a dick. You know what I mean? And so in this first issue, we see that basically he helps somebody. And she goes, how can I ever help repay you? And he goes, I'm a bit short in cash. And she pays him. and his friend goes, we're going to be rich. So Shazam's a bit of a dick, but it was a really good read. But the second half of the book is where it gets interesting, because we've brought back Pandora again. We're back to Pandora, who, as we know, is the woman in red, and we know we're heading for the Trinity Wars and all this sort of stuff. And so we're heading towards all this, and we're finding out more. And she, in this little mini story, she's actually visited by the wizard, who basically said, because she's trying to reopen Pandora's box again, which she's carrying around with her, and because she believes she can try and get it all back in. And the wizard basically appears to her and says, you can't do that. It's not going to go back in. Once it's out, it's out. And she's basically saying, shut up. But the important part here is he basically says, we were wrong. He says, the other two, which would be the Phantom Stranger and...
The Question, I think.
The Question. He goes, they were rightly judged. We were wrong about you. You were unfairly treated. Please don't do this and blah, blah, blah. So it's really interesting. So they are saying that the Phantom Stranger and so forth are actually still not quite as wholesome as they should be. But I think we're heading into some interesting territory with Pandora. And I think as long as we can keep it contained to a couple of the books, maybe Justice League and Trinity Wars, and not try and make it whole universe wide, because if we try and make it whole universe wide, it's going to fall flat on its face because the other books aren't strong enough.
No, and it reminded me, the Phantom Strange was one of the other issue zeros.
Yes, I read that as well.
And it wasn't that great.
No.
No, so I'm interested in that, the focusing on that, those one or two books. Absolutely.
Yeah, and let's keep the Green Lanterns out of it because they've got their own thing going on.
I mean, it's strong. Leave it be.
It's strong.
Same as Snyder's run on Batman. Leave that
be. Yeah, we don't need Batman involved in this. Let's just keep it to Justice League.
You know.
Maybe Agent of Shade. Maybe the Agents of Shade, because it is kind of in the supernatural realm. That is actually another issue zero that was kind of interesting, was the Frankenstein issue zero is kind of interesting because it kind of explains how Frankenstein became this hero of Shade, and talking about the original Dr. Frankenstein and all that sort of stuff. So that's actually kind of an interesting issue to have a look at as well. Overall, though, general feeling is issue zero just feels like a wasted month.
Yeah, look, I have to say that I'm less interested in what DC's doing at the moment than I ever have been before.
Yeah, it's Marvel's
That
time.
Said, we're going to get into some comics news in a moment, and I'm not quite sure about what Marvel's doing either. So should we...
I'm going to try and play this one if you want.
Okay.
Because we've done the update, so let's see if this works.
What a scoop!
You can play the next one.
Gee, thanks, boss. Okay, well, first up, Marvel Point One and Marvel Now is the whole big thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the whole Marvel Now thing. I think this is...
Well, they've been releasing teasers of some of their new series all week, and one of them we have rights to be a little bit excited about, which is Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness look like they're going to be working on a Nova book.
Well, I can be happy about that.
Yeah, so I mean, and I think two of the books that are coming out look like they're going to be tying into the book that we're talking about this week. One of the other ones, and I haven't got it in the show notes. I just moved away from the mic. One of the ones that we haven't got in the show notes is looks like Brian Michael Bendis hasn't got enough books to write.
No,
at the moment. He might be working on a Guardian series, or at least something to do with Star-Lord. Because there's a teaser that just came out that with a picture of a guy that looks a bit like it's Peter Quill, isn't it?
Peter Quill.
Yeah. Looks like Peter Quill holding what looks like Star-Lord's gun.
Oh, okay.
So we're thinking that's what it's going to be. So if it's not a Guardians book, it might be a Star-Lord
now
book.
Now, we will just point out early on that when we talk about Guardians, there are some heavy spoilers. Mm. So please, you will have to have read this before we talk about this, because we're going to come back to some heavy spoilers. But both Nova and Star-Lord coming back into the Marvel Universe is an interesting turn of events.
Certainly is, given the ending of the series. Yeah. One of the other ones that intrigued was Luke Ross and Nick Spencer are apparently attached to what looks like an Agent Coulson comic.
Yeah, it does look a bit like that, doesn't it?
That seems to have been confirmed as an Agent Coulson book, I believe. So, look, you know, he's someone who was introduced in the movie universe. And look, I don't think there's any spoilers at this point to say that he's on Blu-ray. He's no longer in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But he seems to be still going strong in the comics, and whether or not he gets his own book, whether it's a S.H.I.E.L.D. book, who knows?
It's been a long time since we had S.H.I.E.L.D. books. So, probably about time, especially now that they're also talking about the TV
series S.H.I.E.L.D., Joss Whedon, and I'm so pleased to hear that he's going to be writing and directing the first episode.
Oh, good. I hadn't heard that.
Very good.
Can I just go back one step and just say that I really don't like the artwork for the new Nova, though?
No, he looks like
a bobblehead.
it looks like, you know, the Marvel Junior books. You know,
it does. I'm not real keen on that artwork. I'm hoping it's just a cover and the inside looks different.
Yeah, or that's just a teaser image.
Yeah, because I really dug the way Nova looked.
It's just how you do a mature space book, you know, and that's really what I loved about it as well. Look, some of the other comics news, as part of that whole thing, Marvel's bringing a few books to an end. One of them has surprised a lot of people because it reaches a historic issue 700 this year.
I couldn't believe this when you told me this.
But they seem to be bringing The Amazing Spider-Man to an end. Now, undoubtedly, Amazing Spider-Man hasn't been a continuous run.
No, we're actually in volume 2, technically.
Technically, and there was also maybe even volume 3, because depending on how you look at it. Because,
oh, is it the big time and all that sort of stuff?
Because it was renumbered when JMS was on it, and that was like that went back to number 1, and then it was right up until whenever they stopped renumbering and they went back to the original numbers.
According to the wiki, because actually when I was numbering up my issues in my database, I was basically trying to figure out what the hell was going on with the numbers. numbering. According to the official numbering, there is two volumes. Volume one ended with whatever number it was. I can't remember now. But anyway, it ended on a certain number. Volume two started at number one. And then during the run, they resumed back to its original numbering.
That's right.
Which is what they did with, funnily enough, J. Michael Straczynski. This is exactly what he did with Thor. Because the Thor run that he did started at number one, got to issue 13, and then went back to being issue 600 or whatever it was.
That's correct.
So he has a tendency of doing that. Where
it lasted 58 issues under the new numbering.
And then reverted.
Reverted back.
And because it reverted back to its original numbering, it is still technically volume two. So there's two volumes, and volume two is now currently up to 699 or whatever it is, 698 or whatever it is. And now they're bringing it to an end, which I can't, but this is end of an era.
End of an era. I don't believe it's the end, though. I mean, I think there will be another Amazing Spider-Man where they renumber it, and they'll probably renumber it back to 800 when they get closer to that milestone as well. They seem to do this because they did it with a whole lot of books. DC did the same thing. They released...
Well, Wonder Woman did that.
Wonder Woman, exactly right, because it was, you know, 800 or whatever
And
it was.
Once again, J. Michael Straczynski.
Mm.
It's him. Stop it.
Stop renumbering books, J. Michael. So look, you know, that's big news. I mean, Marvel, end of an era. Speaking of the end of an era, David.
if you want to put it that way.
DC Comics is also cancelling a book. Now, are you sitting down?
I'm sitting down. I'm braced for the amazement of
okay,
this.
Just calm yourself, because I know you're about to rage like Hulk any moment. G.I. Combat ending with issue 7.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. I know. What the funny thing about it, because I found the story.
They keep taking away my war books.
Well, as I found this book on Bleeding Cool, the story rather, on Bleeding Cool, as I said, this is one of the first books to have been cancelled twice within the space of a year.
Yeah, pretty much. So what they did was they brought back a World War II book. Cancelled it. Replaced.
I can't even remember what the other one. Men of War. Was
Men of War.
Men of War. Yeah.
Cancelled it. Replaced it with a war book where GIs were going against dinosaurs because they thought that might solve the issue.
And what are kids into these days?
What are they into?
And soldiers now, and dinosaurs. Put that in.
And it sounds like something that Stan Lee would have done. Dinosaur Man.
You know, I got a terrific idea. Dinosaurs and soldiers.
So, yes. So, what? How many issues are we talking?
Seven.
Good work. That time could have been well used to produce something that we might have been readable.
Well, the thing is, the final issue sounds like they're taking, you know, it might be an interesting story. The haunted tank is on the loose in the Black Room, plus a resurrected Nazi at the helm of the war wheel.
Uh-huh.
And in the backup story, the unknown soldier goes to war. That's how they chose to finish out.
And then they just had an issue zero, too, because, you know.
So eight issues, technically.
They had to have an issue zero.
Yeah, so there's been technically eight issues of this thing.
Okay, well, I say good riddance, and if you were replacing it, can we replace it with a non-war book?
Now, Alan Moore.
My favorite whack job. Okay.
Now, Alan Moore is going, it hasn't been to a comic convention.
I'm sorry, I just fire up the webpage and there's a huge picture of Alan Moore staring at me. What is that face? God, look at him.
Now, he hasn't been to a comic convention in like a quarter of a century.
Because he hates people.
But he's going to a comic convention by accident, he says.
What, he just stumbled in the door?
No, it's actually...
He needed to use the bathroom.
I'm going to play this clip. It's an interview he had. Okay. It goes for about 2 minutes, but I think it's worthwhile because it's a surprisingly jovial Alan Moore.
Okay.
And I actually quite like the Alan Moore in this clip.
All right, let's have a listen.
You're doing your first comic convention in 25 years.
Yeah.
Well, are you a bit hard up at the minute, Alan?
Well, it's sort of... I've got too much spare time on my hands. That's a problem. It's a bit like in With Now and I, where they were saying about how they'd gone on holiday by accident. Yeah, I'm kind of going to a comic convention by accident, but it's for a great cause. I mean, Jeff Chanel is organising the event.
Yeah.
He is making it largely on behalf of the libraries, which is how it was first presented to me as an event for the libraries, and I just said yes straight away because I am very, very ardent in my support of the libraries. But, it is a comic convention, although I really won't be there in my capacity as a comic creator. I shall be talking about various things. I'll be talking about how to write in general, how to write comics specifically, because I have a great love of the medium, even though my love of the industry is just bitter ashes at the moment. But no, so I shall be talking about all of that, and then I will be, after about an hour, throwing it open to a questions and answer session where people can ask me anything that they want. And then after that, I shall be being whisked away in a big limousine, probably.
Straight back to Hollywood.
Yeah, straight back to Hollywood.
So one of the questions I want to ask is who are you and what have you done with Alan Moore?
Well, I was about to say, they can ask me any question they like as long as it's not about movie adaptations or the comic industry or where I live or...
As long as it's about libraries.
About libraries.
Or how to riot comics. Yeah. You know, he did say how to write comics, not how to riot in comics.
Right, yeah, right.
I just wanted to clear that up.
Oh, he's a funny guy.
He's hilarious. I love the man.
He's just a nut job. I love him.
Now, moving swiftly into... I'm going to punch this button because you said I was allowed to.
You go for it.
Guardians of the Galaxy is a bit of a theme.
As it should be.
this issue, it has the film adaptation of said movie is going to be... It's infectious, isn't it?
It is.
The film adaptation is coming out in 2014, as was announced back in Comic-Con. It has a writer-director now. His name is James Gunn.
Shut up, crime!
James Gunn, for those of you who don't know his work, he previously did a really, really underrated horror film called Slither, which I don't know if you've seen.
I have seen Slither.
I love this thing. That had Nathan Fillion in it.
It did.
And it was just such a
great... And a bathtub with a woman being...
Yeah. I loved that movie to death, and it was great when it came out. I thought, this is a guy. I like this guy's sense of humor. Joss Whedon, a couple of weeks ago, before this official announcement came out, and said, like, you know, I like James's take on it. I'd really like to. I'd support him, you know, because Joss Whedon is now the face of Marvel Phase 2.
Hmm.
He is kind of the narrative architect behind the whole thing.
As
it should be. And he's also, James Gunn also directed a movie called Super, which is about, it's kind of like the flip side middle-aged Kick-Ass, really.
It is such a good film.
It is brilliant. As you quote again, David.
Shut up, crime!
it is really good. It's Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page.
And I don't really like Rainn Wilson.
I don't really like Ellen Page that much.
Well, I don't mind Ellen Page, but I don't really like Rainn Wilson, but I love them both in this because they're both psychotic.
It's a brilliant film. See it if you haven't. Get an idea of what his sense of humor is like.
She is so hyper-kinetic in it.
She's great. The important thing is the man has a sense of humor, no matter what genre he works in, which is, and we're going to talk about this very shortly. It's something you need when you're dealing with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
So I think this is a pretty good move. But Marvel Studios, it is. I'm making a few moves. I'll just read a little bit of, James Gunn's thing before I go. He posted on his Facebook page.
Yeah, I read this morning. This was really good.
And he said some of the things in there. He's, now it's out of the bag, you can say that he's involved with Guardians of the Galaxy because he's been, basically Kevin Feige has allowed him to release that information now. He said, there's a lifelong lover of Marvel comics, space epics, and raccoons.
have to have a love of raccoons.
Oh, absolutely. And if you don't love Rocket Raccoon by the end of reading Guardians of the Galaxy, you are not human. I don't want to talk to you.
No, exactly.
He said, this is the movie I've been waiting to make since I was 9 years old. Kevin Joss and the folks over at Marvel have been amazing collaborators, yada, yada, yada. And basically, at the end, he says, and that's it for now, other than the occasional photos of my dog and cat here on Facebook. I'll talk to you again in August 2014 when Guardians is released. So, as you said, David, he's on lockdown now.
He's
after
in
this.
Blackout now. You're not going to hear a lot. You're not going to hear a lot. It's the same thing that happened with, what's his name, the 30 Days of Night director, when he got hired to do Twilight Eclipse, because he'd done nothing but bag out Twilight and talk about how terrible it was, and then suddenly he got signed to direct it, and suddenly he just went quiet.
Yeah.
And just disappeared for a while because, of course, you're suddenly in media blackout while you're busy doing something.
But don't worry, people, we have got Iron Man 3, We've yes. got Thor 2.
Yes.
Sorry, Thor The Dark World.
Yes.
We have Captain America and Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
A little film called The Avengers 2.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little one. It may not be called The Avengers 2, but it will be the Avengers sequel coming out before then.
I think it should be called Avengers The Thanos Imperative.
Oh, how about Avengers The Infinity Gauntlet?
Or that too.
Because that's already been teased in Thor. But between now and then, but that's phase two. But studio head
Kevin. Something else I read about this morning, which I was unaware of until I read about it this morning, the Thanos that's at the end credits of the Avengers, I thought was a CG creation. Apparently, that is an actor under makeup,
and apparently going to recast him when they bring him back. Another thing I wanted to quickly mention, because we haven't mentioned before, we mentioned Agent Coulson earlier. If you buy the UK Blu-ray or DVD, okay, spoilers on the show, always, people. Agent Coulson gets something pointy shoved through him. It has been digitally removed in the UK version and fan outrage. Now, internet geeks have already sort of gone into conspiracy theory mode going, oh, they're going to retcon him and bring him back as the Vision, which would be nice.
I've heard that rumor before, yeah.
But whether that's true or not, this is purely, I think, a BBFC censorship thing. They've done it before on things just to maintain that rating.
Let's not beat around the bush here. The British censorship board is brutal.
Yeah.
And they did things like the rat in The Abyss, where they put the rat into the breathing liquid, was actually cut out of the film because they thought it looked like animal cruelty.
There's scenes in, I think it was, I can't remember, was it one of the Matrix films? No, it was in Star Wars Phantom Menace. There's a headbutt that they cut out because headbutting's not allowed.
And they also cut out the spray of blood. When he gets cut in half, when Darth Maul gets cut
even
in half.
Even in Disney, even Lilo and Stitch was edited slightly because there's a scene where a kid hides inside either a fridge or a washing machine, and under the BBFC, that's imitable behaviour, and they didn't want kids copying that.
So the British Censorship Board is brutal.
Yeah.
So. And what we used to have to face and what we used to have to deal with here in Australia, which we don't have to deal with anymore, thankfully, but in the early 80s, all the way through to, God, probably even the early 90s, we used to get our video masters from England because we were the same broadcasting system.
Yeah.
And so what would happen is when Videodrome, for instance, came out at the cinemas here, we had the uncut version. When it came out on home video, it was slaughtered and it was cut to shreds because that was the British version. And what we have now seen is all these films being re-released because we now master our own films here. And so we are starting to get the proper cuts of our films.
Sometimes it still happens because we're in the same region. Yeah. But more often we get our own uncensored versions here.
Thankfully, we are not seeing that as much as we were seeing it.
Just wanted to mention that quickly because this is sort of Avengers related. Well, it is very much Avengers related. Kevin Feige has been talking to MTV a lot this week. Because there's two articles went up. The first one
he's been very talkative this week.
He has been talkative. He spoke to MTV about Thanos and Marvel. And in here, there's a couple of interesting tidbits. One of them was that he's, he's been lobbying around. And they point out in this article, with all the things that happened in Avengers, one of the biggest movies of the year, one of the things that we're all talking about was that big purple bloke who appeared at the end. And that's Thanos and, where he's going to fit in. Now, he says... a lot of people say it. Some people might say he's going to be in Guardians. Some people say he's going to be in The Avengers 2. He says clearly there's a purpose to us putting him in the end of that movie. We have plans for him. I wouldn't say we ever feel the need to rush anything one way or the other. We succeeded in phase one because we stuck to our guns and stuck to the plan. That plan took place over many, many years and it ultimately paid off. I see phase two unfolding in the same way of us taking our time, us doing what's right for each individual movie, while folding the elements that will only build up to the culmination of phase two, but even phase three.
Ah!
So that's music to our ears. It's like, we've got five movies planned and he's probably got another 10.
We've got the next 10 years planned, let's face it.
This is awesome. But then he goes on to say...
And I would like to point out that DC can't seem to get a film off the ground.
Yeah, that's true. We're still waiting for anything happening, with the exception of the Batman films. Nothing.
And of course, the Discovery Channel special that's coming out soon.
Yeah. Well, and apparently there's a Man of Steel film coming out next year, but we saw some stock footage from a Terrence Malick film, so far.
We saw something about some fishing special.
Yeah. I think we decided it's what Henry Cavill was doing in his downtime.
And you know what's so funny about this is that there is on YouTube, my son over there found it on YouTube, which was from Comic-Con, which was that same footage but intercut with Superman feats and flying and effects, but it was all really bad quality because it's like somebody videotaping it in the theater. They didn't choose to release that as the trailer. They released what they did release.
That's
and you sit there and go, what the hell? You had footage. You had stuff to show and make us all go, wow. And what we can see in that footage, even though it's really bad video quality, looks great.
Mm.
You know? So why are, you know, that shot with the vault behind him, that photograph? Yeah. You actually see that in the trailer. Hey. You know? And it's like, why didn't we see that? You know, anyway, enough bagging on DC. We'll talk about more of that when it actually comes out. We can rag on them some more.
Well, Kev goes on to say that, like, you know, he said he feels free to recast that role. As you said, it was a human in that thing at the end.
Oh, it's a mask. So you can put anybody you want.
But he's going to, you know, recast it. But he said, suddenly you've got a million people who've never heard of an Infinity Gauntlet or Mad Titan learning those terms. He said, I was equally excited by the notion that people went out and tried shawarma for the first time.
Which, for our Australian listeners out there, if you do have the Blu-ray, you can now stick to the end of the credits because it is there now.
Yes.
Which is the little shawarma scene, which is hysterical.
It's great.
You know, it's brilliant. And that only the American audience has got that. So now you can finally
enjoy
that.
Yeah, we got it a week early or 2 weeks early.
Yeah, so they hadn't shot it yet.
Now, also, there's Keeping Things Cosmic. As you said, Kevin Feige has been very talkative this week. He's been hinting, dropping hints, if you want to call them those, maybe outright plot points to the future of the Hulk. Now, look, you know, after his appearance in The Avengers, we actually suddenly saw a future for the character.
Yes.
Two films that had had, you know, relative degrees of success, you know, under Edward Norton and Eric Banner, respectively. But with Mark Ruffalo, suddenly we saw the reason why Hulk is such an enduring character.
Absolutely.
And why he would fit into this world. Now, Hulk in the comics has had this crazy couple of years, you know, all sorts of things. And he's hinted at the first, he said it's possible. Basically, he said, I don't think there's a lot that we couldn't do someday as the cinematic universe continues to grow and expand and get as big as the comic book universe. He said, Planet Hulk is a cool story, he added. World War Hulk is a cool story.
Yeah.
So I think...
Can I throw a prediction in?
Hmm?
Hulk goes a bit mental in Avengers 2. Hulk is sent off planet by the end of Avengers 2, and then we reboot the Hulk movies as a galactic.
That would be nice, and that would tie in nicely.
And it would tie into the universe.
That would tie in. Yep, we'll come back in 3 years.
And see if I'm right about that.
What I really love to hear him say is he said, I think there's pitfalls of continuity overload and mythology getting so dense that it collapses in on itself. It happens every few decades or so in the comics. Apart from that, I'd say everything's on the table.
Hmm.
So I think
he's absolutely right about that, though. Yeah. I mean, this is why we have things like the New 52. This is why we have the Marvel Stealth reboot. They have to reinvent because, it does. It reaches maximum density, basically, and just goes, we can't go any further. We've written ourselves into this. I think X-Men versus Avengers is a perfect example of we have taken this as far as we can go.
We just pitch it. After this, we can do X-Men and Avengers versus the Defenders versus...
Yeah, so it's like we go, okay, Marvel now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like we've gone as far as we can go.
When your universe is the equivalent of the number of Street Fighter 2 games that they kept releasing, you know, like Street Fighter, you know, if they start releasing Avengers versus X-Men Turbo.
Turbo X.
Turbo X, yeah. Turbo X versus. And all
like that. Actually, I would like to just bring up, I didn't mention it while what we've been reading. We're probably going to talk about it once it reaches conclusion. We've only got one more issue. So I guess when it reaches conclusion, we'll probably talk about X-Men versus Avengers.
Which will be next month. Yeah.
Well, it's every 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, so, but by the time we come back.
Yeah, by the time we come back.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out, speaking of Hulk, did you read issue 11?
No, I haven't, actually.
There's a wonderful moment in issue 11, minor spoiler, where it actually starts, the issue actually starts with Captain America standing on the edge of a cliff, basically talking to somebody off panel. And he's going, I know you don't want to get involved, and I know you don't really like any of us, and I know you get mistreated, but we really need your help right now because of what's happening. And he's basically laying out what has happened with the whole Phoenix Force, and he lays it all out and says, so will you help us? And it cuts to the next panel, and it's this huge Hulk standing in front of him and goes, Hulk, help. And nice. I just thought, brilliant.
Yeah, I like that. Now, David, we've been talking for 48 minutes. And
we haven't even touched Guardians.
We haven't touched Guardians. Listeners, I'm going to warn you, we might be going for a little while on this one.
We haven't been here for a while.
We haven't been here for a while. This is not the biggest thing we've ever done, but in terms of scale and scope, it's the biggest thing.
Well, for me it is, because I've actually read a little bit more than you even. So
yeah.
If you actually take into scope the entire... because Guardians actually comes into this equation 20, 30 issues in. because we've already gone through two whole miniseries when we finally hit the Guardians standalone book. Then there's the standalone book, and while that standalone book is happening, there's two more miniseries that happen during that time, and then it concludes with another miniseries.
And that leads into two more miniseries after that, and which I've started reading as well.
So. Simultaneously, it all interlinks with Nova, which is another 30-issue run.
Yes.
So it is an incredibly dense in scope comic book.
So for the purposes of this, we're about... Actually, I'm going to play the theme and then we'll...
Yeah, let's come back to it.
We'll lay out our rules.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Rules in a knife fight?
Now, basically, what we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. We're mainly talking about the 26 issues of the Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning run.
I think we're only going to touch on the other series involved where we have intersects or where, like, just for reference material.
But realistically, if you're wanting to read this whole saga, you start with Annihilation.
Yes.
And its follow-up series, Annihilation Conquest.
And I should point out that Annihilation actually, if you read the complete Annihilation, actually starts about 20 issues prior to that, because there's a build-up. There's the actual prelude to Annihilation, which actually runs across a whole bunch of different books, including, which I had no idea even existed, a Thanos standalone book.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know he had his own book. And that is actually, I want to get more issues of that, because I read about four or five of those as part of this prelude. And I want to find the rest of the series, because it's a completely different Thanos.
But don't be frightened, because you can jump straight into Guardians issue one, because we both did that. And but then we went back and, you know, read other things and so forth. But really, the complete story, you know, the lead up to Annihilation notwithstanding, starts with Annihilation Conquest, goes for the 25 issues rather of Guardians of the Galaxy, leads into a mini series and a couple of standalones called The Thanos Imperative, which leads then directly into The Annihilators, which leads into, I think it's called The Annihilators Earthfall or something along those
which
lines.
Which is the one I haven't read
that one either. I've just read Annihilators. So,
collectively, it is known as the Marvel Cosmic Universe. And amongst this universe, for those who are going, oh, it all sounds kind of airy-fairy, this is taking place in 2008. And there is actually one crossover, very briefly, where they come to Earth and talk to the Fantastic Four.
That's right, yeah.
So it is actually happening now.
And constant references are being made to the fact that it's all wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, rifty things. But they do make references to the fact that 2008 to 2010, which is the time the comic ran, is when it all changed.
Yeah.
So it's very
interesting,
much
because one of the characters who comes into it halfway through the run and becomes a regular in the series is actually a Earth superhero who was in the Negative Zone, which is a direct resultant of Civil War. And so it's like, because they kind of cross into the Negative Zone, and we end up with Blastar, who is actually like the head of all the villains in the Negative Zone, has now basically come out into the universe and is now self-proclaiming himself a king. And so there's a lot going on in this world. But I think what's really interesting and where it is important, even though you don't need them to be able to read the comic books, it is sometimes fun to go back and have a look at some of the preludes, the Annihilations and stuff, because it gives you a real background. As an example, Galactus and Silver Surfer have always been there in the Marvel universe, but I've never really understood what Galactus was. I mean, he was just this big guy who goes around apparently eating planets. In the Marvel Cosmic Universe, in Annihilation and in Guardians of the Galaxy, they actually explain him. And they explain the concept of the anomalies.
Anomalies and the abstracts.
And the abstracts and stuff like that. Yeah, and they're saying that he's been around since the beginning of time. This is what he does. It's like he is... he is doing something that is required in the universe.
This is stuff Neil Gaiman dips into with death versus life.
And the fact that death is actually an abstract. Death is actually an entity. Yeah. And Thanos is in love with death.
And in fact, you know, Thanos is one of the avatars of, you know, death and such. But we're jumping ahead of ourselves.
Sorry. Because, I'm just very excited. It's a great universe.
No, look, and it gives you an idea of just how deep and rich this is. But don't be frightened. You can jump in straight from Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, these were collected. They have gone out of print. We read these in single issues.
But they are available on Comixology.
They are available on Comixology. I wouldn't be surprised if Marvel does the omnibus deal on this before the film comes out. And that'll definitely be a book to get, because hopefully they'll include everything from Annihilation through to Thanos Imperative. Now, as I said, this is written by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, who did write the Annihilation Conquest storylines. When Annihilation Conquest ends... David, correct me if I'm wrong, but the basically Thanos is killed.
Yeah. So what you've got at the end of Annihilation is basically the universe is kind of torn asunder. The war that has basically happened has caused problems in the universe that are of cosmic imbalance, and Drax the Destroyer, whose sole purpose was to kill Thanos, has succeeded. He went up and he ripped his heart out. And basically, he's now lost in the universe and doesn't know what he's going to do. And Nova, who I think we should touch on briefly, is basically the Nova Corps. For those who haven't read the Cosmic Universe at all, the Nova Corps is like the Green Lantern Corps. It's the Marvel equivalent of the Green Lantern Corps. It's this concept of a intergalactic police force. And they have like an accumulation of knowledge and wealth and power called the Nova Force, which they use to stop... crimes from taking place within the universe, cosmic crimes. During Annihilation, the Nova Corps was destroyed, completely eliminated, and only Richard Rider, the one we know, Earth Nova, basically, has survived, and the world mind that powers all of the Nova Corps and all of the Nova Force has been put into him. So he is an all-powerful Nova, basically, who has, and his sole mission basically at this point has to be to find a new place to basically put the world mind and then to start rebuilding the core. That's kind of what he's doing. There's a whole comic book about this, and go read Nova, and that goes into a whole bunch. But he's friends with Peter Quill, and this is where it all starts, because at the end, the last panel of Annihilation Conquest is basically Nova heading up to a balcony, and he says, I want to talk to Peter Quill about something. And that's where Guardians picks up.
Yeah, so and after after the invasion of the Kree.
Yeah.
And after that's all over, Peter Quill, also known as Star-Lord.
He was Star-Lord. And he doesn't actually want the mantle anymore because he hasn't got the powers, he hasn't got the implants, he hasn't got the ship, he hasn't got anything. He's just human. Yeah, but so everybody still calls him Star-Lord.
but he starts off, basically he wants to create a team of heroes that go out and do things before they happen, sort of goes out and react
and have a look at and fix the problems that have been caused by the wars.
Yeah, because there's all these rifts that have opened up as a result of it. So he recruits a bunch of people that includes Adam Warlock, who was prior to that at one stage, who also has a dark side called...
Which comes back,
yeah. But that is part of comics history called Magus. There's Drax the Destroyer, who we've mentioned, who's created for the sole purpose.
And now doesn't have a purpose, exactly. So of course he kind of is just drifting around.
There's Gamora, who is...
the most dangerous woman in the universe.
Thank you. there's Phyla Vell, who is the new Quasar, because she's got the gauntlet thing. She's pretty hot.
Yeah.
Sorry, gents. She's not batting for your team.
No.
There is Rocket Raccoon, who is exactly what he sounds like. He is an anthropomorphic raccoon.
Brilliant.
He's a well-armed raccoon with an attitude.
He's a raccoon who is a munitions expert, a munitions and strategic expert.
But I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Max from Sam and Max was based on him.
Yeah.
Because
this is not his first appearance. I was going back over his history. He's appeared in She-Hulk. He had his own miniseries.
Yeah,
he
was big in the 70s.
Yeah, he's been kicking around for a while.
And of course, there's also Groot.
Groot is probably one of my second favorite character in the world.
Think Treebeard, but sort of slightly sprightly. But
he's an ant.
All he says, as far as we know, is "I am Groot."
Yes. And Rocket Raccoon's answer is "Yes, you are."
Yes, you are. We later find out that actually means something. Yeah. But he's an ant. He's a tree. And there's also Mantis, who's sort of like a bug-like creature. And
quite frankly, she's green with antennas, but she's hot.
She's
too.
Also hot.
Oh my God, she's hot. the way they draw her is just amazing. Now, she's what's referred to as a Mentat.
Yeah.
And also she believes that she is the mother of the future savior of the world.
That's right. she can also now she can see slightly into the future. Is that right?
Yeah, well, she basically her part of her mentat ability is she basically sees all outcomes of everything before it happens, but she doesn't actually know which one it is that is going to happen. She just sees them all, and so there will be a point where she goes, "Oh, that's what's happening.
It's this one." Yeah. So she's in there. She sort of supports,
and she's also an amazing telepath.
Yeah.
And a martial arts expert.
Now, speaking of telepaths, where they all meet and where they all have their little base of operations is Nowhere, spelled K-N-O-W-where, which is a sort of a space station in a pocket, is it?
It's a pocket of space, quite literally, nowhere.
Nowhere.
It actually doesn't exist. Mm. It's a point where galaxies all intersect to a point where it's like this negative space. Mm. And in this negative space is the head of one of these ancient races of robots that, as somebody said, whatever killed that, if something actually managed to kill that and rip its head off, we don't ever want to meet what that was, because these things are immense. This is an immense robot head, and they built a city inside it, floating in nowhere.
Mm. And the chief of security of Nowhere is probably the second greatest, if not the equal greatest character of the series, is Cosmo. Now, Cosmo is a dog. He was a former cosmonaut dog. Remember,
let's not forget the fact that he's a Soviet dog.
Remember when when the Soviets used to send dogs into space? Well, he's one of those. At some point, he can't remember when, he became sentient and psychic.
Incredibly powerful.
Incredibly powerful. He's one of the most powerful, one of the four most powerful, in fact.
Him and Mantis are like two of the most powerful telepaths.
In the galaxy.
In the galaxy,
And he's their chief of security, but also an unofficial member of the team. And eventually he kind of leads the team. Well, not so much leads the team, but is instrumental in getting them together.
He's their home base as well. So for the purposes of this particular run, he doesn't actually go out on missions, but he's the one that gives them the passport bracelets. And because from nowhere, you can teleport to anywhere in the universe because it's nowhere. Mm. And so basically they wear teleport bracelets and they can actually go from nowhere to any point in space. And he's the one that controls all of that for them.
So when it kicks off...
Oh, and we should point out that Rocket Raccoon doesn't like
Cosmo.
Doesn't
like him for some reason,
He finds him creepy.
Yeah. Rocket Raccoon finds the whole idea of a talking dog creepy.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Yeah. Which sets up the thing, but they end up becoming quite tight by the end of the series as well, as, you know, as does Groot. So, like, all the animals... When we get into Annihilators, there's even more furry creatures, but that's much later on. It kind of starts off, I guess it's a good point to introduce the Universal Church of Truth.
Yes, because they are a recurring theme throughout it. And this is a really interesting idea. It's almost like they went, what if we took religious fanaticism to its ultimate level? And what if you could actually harness that sort of fanaticism? And so what they are is basically a faith-driven organization. They fly around what are called cardinal ships.
Yeah.
And these cardinals have... what are their faith? What, it's not faith. It's faith drives.
Faith drives.
Basically, the concept is all of the people praying to the church basically goes into a device that harnesses all of that prayer and allows them to do anything.
Because they believe.
Because they believe.
And they always say at the start of it, I believe, and they do something.
And that they're channeling this pool of faith power, basically. Mm. Some strange psychic power that they've managed to harness. And it makes them very formidable in these huge ships. And of course, this goes absolute bang on head-to-head against everything that Peter Quill stands for.
Yeah. And so that's all happening. And this is their first mission where they have to close down one of these fissures in space. Like, there's all these rips in space, and they end up confronting the Universal Church of Truth. Now, that starts something that comes back again and again and again. And the fact that... and also introduces the idea that Adam Warlock is something... more than he is introduced as, and that comes back in a huge way in the back half of this book as well. When we're talking about something as big as this, it's easy to get dragged down into
detail.
But let's just say you're effectively splitting this up to, and if you look at the Wikipedia entry, you can see this. There's this initial sort of stuff. There is a war of kings arc that runs through the middle of this as well, and that was a bigger thing.
Well, that also brings in another group all to itself, which is the Inhumans, who originally were on Earth, and then they were on the moon, and now they seem to be out in space, and they are they're actually a lot more hostile than I remember them originally being. When they were on the Earth, they were actually kind of placid, and they just want to be left alone. But now they're actually actively out there doing stuff.
But one of the characters that is introduced in their first confrontation, one of their first missions, is another character who becomes quite important, which is Vance Astro, or Major Victory, who is someone who has come back from the future, and he's actually one of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
For those who are wondering, because like me, when I first heard they were doing a Guardians of the Galaxy film, I was familiar with the 70s Guardians of the Galaxy, and I went, really, we're doing a film of them? But this isn't that Guardians. That Guardians is actually set in the year 3000.
Yeah.
And it's a big space thing, and that all ended a while ago. But to Marvel's credit, they have interlaced all of these continuities, and what we've done is we've brought him back in time.
And he's basically got Captain America's shield.
Yes.
Yeah, and so he's running around, but he's a major, not a captain.
That's right. And we also introduce Starhawk.
That's right.
Who is a very important character in this, because Starhawk is trying to stop a rift. He's trying to stop, or she, as the case might be, because it keeps changing sex, but he's trying to stop an anomaly, which is actually going to rip the universe apart.
Because she's one who knows.
She's one who knows, that's right, because she's been flying through all the various slipstreams of space and has found some sort of anomaly, but doesn't quite know which one, and believes it to be Major Victory, because he's come back in time, but it's not.
No, it's not.
There's actually more to it than that.
So we've got all this happening simultaneously, and this is basically just the start of the story.
This isn't the first five issues.
Yeah. So really, when we start getting down to the nitty-gritty of things, we're talking about this War of Kings, where the Inhumans and who are they mainly going against? I've forgotten the name of the...
So they actually are taking on, oh God, give me a second. This is because it gets very complicated, because it's all to do with the Skree and the Krull and the Shi'ar.
The Shi'ar, that's right.
And the Shi'ar. And so the Inhumans have basically taken over the Shi'ar, is that right?
Yeah, so it's a war between the Vulcan-led Shi'ar and the Inhuman-led Kree Empire.
The Inhuman-led Kree Empire. That's right. So the Inhumans have basically taken control of the Kree Empire. The Shi'ar, who used to be led by, what's her name, Professor X's main squeeze, she's been overthrown,
now
Vulcan is doing it, and this war, this universe is at war, basically.
And the war is threatening to rip apart the very fabric of the universe.
Yeah, and the Inhumans actually have some sort of super weapon that they're threatening to use as well, which is causing real problems, because if they use that, this is going to really cause problems.
And it kind of does.
And it kind of does.
Yeah, so when the Guardians come in, and they've basically declared themselves at this stage, the Guardians come in. Now, we should actually say that something major has happened in here, spoilers and all people. Between that first mission and when the War of the Kings starts, the truth about how the Guardians came together is revealed.
And we also lose a couple of members. I think this is also important to mention that the lineup of the Guardians actually changes about three times in the book, because people come and go. But we actually have a major lineup change at one point when Bug comes into it.
Yes. Is the same race as it?
Well, we're not quite sure of that, because she doesn't have the toes and stuff.
That's
that he
true,
has. So
yeah.
I don't think they're quite the same race, but they're kind of similar. And we also, because of a trip through the negative zone at one point, we pick up Jack Flagg.
That's right.
Who is a human who has been imprisoned in the negative zone because of the events of Civil War.
So and hates this cosmic stuff.
And hates this cosmic stuff, which he actually doesn't say stuff, but you know, he hates it and it repeats that all the way through, but can't go home because he's deemed a criminal.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of just hanging out with them. And so he's quite funny, because he becomes almost like our point of view.
Yes.
We're kind of seeing the story through him, because he's like, what the hell's going on?
And it's through him, through, you know, when we meet him in the negative zone, that we introduce King Blaster and all those sort of people.
That's right.
As well.
And then King Blaster comes out into the universe, and that's got to do with the War of Kings as well.
Yeah.
And he causes a lot more chaos during all of that realm, because he's trying to take control and trying to create his own kingdom as well. And so it becomes very epic in scope when you get through the War of Kings. If you just stick with the Guardians of the Galaxy, though, and don't go straying off into the miniseries, it is actually surprisingly fairly straightforward. The War of Kings and the Realm of Kings miniseries actually take place as side trips off of what's going on. And what's really interesting is you'll be reading Guardians of the Galaxy and they'll be talking about events that happened in War of Kings, but they're still going on with what they're doing.
Mm.
Which their direct thing is actually, I would say that it's more to do with the church and what they're getting up to. Is something that the Guardians are taking in the second half of the series are really getting involved in, because the church is starting to play up by bringing people like Warlock back,
yes,
and stuff like that, and turning Warlocks.
And so, this is where, you know, the essence of War of Kings, I mean, they've tried to warn the Inhumans that, look, your war is going to rip apart the fabric, and that results in this whole hostage situation, and it's quite good. It's quite funny.
Yeah.
But it's also, it really escalates much faster. It's like, you know, wow, that really escalated faster. Part of the team, and it's basically Star-Lord, I'm just reading off the entry here because I've forgotten exactly which ones went there. It was Star-Lord, Mantis, Bug, Jack Flag, and Cosmo go forward to the 31st century.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah, that's right.
And they basically, there's not much left at that stage, and there's this little group who are calling themselves the Guardians.
And it's got a lot to do with the Badoon again, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And it's like there's not much left there, and they say, look, something happened at this point, and they're able to, everything's about to come undone. And this team effectively sacrifices themselves in the future to get a message back to their the rest of their team in the 21st century and say, look, you know, this is the point where it all goes wrong. You have to stop this thing. And they, for all intents and purposes, die in the future. But that's not the end. It's cosmic stuff.
It's never the end.
basically, they need to get a message back to the Warlock saying and telling him that the fault's there. They have to stop the fault. Warlock is unable to stop that fault because the way his powers work, it's sort of a bit magic. It's a bit cosmic.
He's not even sure.
He's folding realities over each other. He's erasing past ones. And
he has to dip into a reality that was sealed. And because it's the only way to solve the fault is to dip into that reality. The only problem is that's the reality that contains the bad him.
Yeah, the dark side, which is Magus. He basically becomes this Magus character again, who is the dark version of himself. It's unleashed onto the world. And that's the dark version of himself is powerful, almost unstoppable. So they have to make some pretty tough calls at this point. Star-Lord's basically told, Peter's told that he's going to have to make a decision, the toughest decision, in order to stop it, which he does, which is after he seemingly sees half of his teammates killed, he makes the decision to kill his former friend.
Yep.
That's not the end, of course.
No, of course not.
that's not the end because that was a ruse. You know, and because of that,
No.
That was a ruse because
I'm reliving the conflict. Yeah, I know. The story.
and that was a ruse because Magus wanted them to believe that, wanted to make them think they'd win because he was on the ropes because they had a secret weapon, which was the cosmic cube.
Yeah, which Peter Quill just kind of whips out every time.
Oh, I've got this.
Oh, by the way.
So that basically ends up with this. They're back to a situation where they're threatening to tear apart the fabric of the universe again. So, long story short,
it's a really epic in scope. We should also point out that Phil Avell by this stage has actually also died.
Yes,
has gone into a unknown universe where she has found her lover who died during Annihilation, brought her back, and has become the Avatar of Death.
Yes.
So, and the real Mar-Vell, the real Quasar, basically has come back to life.
Yes.
So it's like all of that happens.
All that's happened. And all this rifty, timey-wimey, rippy, spacey stuff has allowed another universe, the Cancerverse, to start encroaching on our universe.
Yes.
Or the Marvel Cosmic Universe, as it were. It's not really our universe. This stuff doesn't happen.
No, which is what the Thanos Imperative is all about.
Yes. And that's kind of the last two issues of Guardians lead directly into that. We introduce the idea of the Cancerverse. We introduce...
we should explain the Cancerverse because at first description it sounds kind of stupid. Cancerverse.
It sounds kind of stupid. It actually makes perfect sense when you realize who's leading.
Yeah, and the concept of the Cancerverse is, if anybody knows anything about cancer is a cell that just won't stop replicating.
Yes.
It basically won't die. It just keeps growing and eating everything around it. In the Cancerverse, the concept is they have killed death. And because they have killed death, it just keeps expanding because nothing ever dies. And so basically it's reached breaking point. And because of the events of Guardians of the Galaxy and the rift that has basically been opened, it is now basically spilled over. It's looking for new real estate. It's spilled over into our universe. And now it's looking at eating everything in our universe.
Now, a character comes back at the very end of Guardians.
Yes.
Who is a character people who have watched the Avengers will be
familiar
with.
Which I didn't see coming at all.
No, I actually didn't know that at all. It was because there's been this cocoon thing, and there's been the whole time there's been like this kind of other what they thought was another Adam Warlock. The Universal
and the reason
Truth.
For that is because in Annihilation, Adam Warlock was put into a cocoon at one point, and he was basically rebirthed into the universe. And so when the Church basically has what they believe to be their savior, you're going, okay, it's another Adam Warlock in here, and we're going to rebirth him. When it finally opens.
It ain't Adam Warlock.
What spills out in the end is a mindless Thanos.
And it's a mindless, angry Thanos because he's...
naked.
Mindless, angry, naked Thanos. The adventures of the mindless, angry, naked Thanos coming this fall. No, and the reason he's angry and pissed off is because he's alive again.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be.
But he's finally been put by side of his beloved death.
Yeah, and this is what I was talking at the beginning of the show, I was talking at the beginning of the segment, and I was saying that there is a standalone Thanos comic, which is fascinating, is because it's basically a very different Thanos. It's a Thanos who is basically wandering around trying to find death.
Yeah.
And because he's given up. He's saying, I've been defeated by Avengers, I've been defeated by Fantastic Four, I've been defeated this, I've been defeated, but I can't die. All he wants to do is find death and end it.
Yeah.
And so it's this very different Thanos at the beginning of this entire scope. We've seen kind of almost this tamed Thanos.
Mm.
And now at the end of all this, after he's come back, he's now pissed.
Yeah.
And of course, how does Peter Quill stop him? Oh, I happen to have this cosmic cube in my pocket. I love the fact that one of them actually goes, did you have that on you the whole time?
Now, the Thanos imperative is this rather awkward alliance between
because
Thanos,
they suddenly need him.
Yeah, and what's left of the Guardians going into the Cancerverse to restore death to that universe effectively so that to bring it down. Now, what's revealed is who the Avatar of Life is in this universe. Mm. It's someone who had actually died in the Marvel 616 universe. And the fact that it's called the Cancerverse might have been a hint, but it certainly wasn't one I picked up, and that was a shock for me as well. It was actually Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Is the Avatar of Life in that universe. And that was actually a gasp moment for me because I thought, oh my God.
Yeah. I love the fact that the Cancerverse is almost like the Marvel equivalent of the Bizarro world because you've got, instead of the Avengers, there's the Revengers. And, you know, and there are all these distorted, weird versions of all of the people we know.
And it's great because one of the most powerful moments in comics, and when we watch that Ink miniseries, they talk about death in comics.
Yeah.
And they're talking about one of the most powerful moments is when Captain Marvel died of cancer. It's because all the superpowers, all the magic in that universe, they couldn't beat it.
And they didn't bring him back.
And they didn't bring him back.
That was a big factor.
And they never brought him back.
Yeah. And in fact, they still didn't.
Technically, they haven't.
This is not that Captain Marvel. No. He is a Captain Marvel from the Cancerverse, not from ours. But it's still a gasping moment where you go, oh my God, they've made him a bad guy.
And they've brought him back. Because in that world, when he was dying, rather than actually clock out peacefully and everybody mourned, he took the life force, basically, of all, as I understand it, of everyone around him and killed death.
Yeah.
He stopped death, and that's why there's all these twisted versions of, because he's kind of, I think, eked some of that power back out to, so they're basically shuffling versions, you know, almost zombie versions of, undead, but not really.
Monster versions.
Versions.
They're horrible.
Of,
I mean, it's they're all kind of snarling and mindless and under his control, you know?
Absolutely. This is the world that they want to stop because this world is going to take over theirs. It's the Guardians. They do what they have to do.
And what I think we should backtrack here for one second, because one thing we brushed over and we didn't actually explain was, first of all, how the Guardians actually got together.
We don't need to know that.
We brushed past that straight away. But the other thing that I think is really interesting about the Guardians is that nobody actually respects them. And all the way through the comic book, it's like, who appointed you?
They keep turning and go, we're the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm like, yeah, it says who.
or the other answer is, who?
Who, yeah.
It's like when they meet Fantastic Four and they say, you have to do this because this will stop the universe, blah, blah. And they disappear and the Fantastic Four is like, who was that? You know, it's like, I love the fact that all the way, even after they help everybody, even after they close rips, they still get no respect. Yeah. Nobody really knows who they are. Nobody cares about them.
They're to the point, by the time we get to Annihilators, Peter Quill's come to the understanding that, you know what, I don't, the Guardians was a great idea, but it wasn't enough. You know, and we were never going to get the respect because we didn't have any heavy hitters. So Annihilators, which follows it up, and I am jumping ahead, but Annihilators, which follows it up, is basically Peter Quill's legacy, which is, I want a team that has some heavy hitters, and boy does it.
Yeah, and he basically appoints Cosmo to pull together a team of, let's face it, they're basically cosmic anomalies, and he pulls them together and basically says, this has the power.
Yeah.
To make change.
But it's funny, when that series starts, Annihilators, they're actually worried that this character that comes back at the end of Thanos Imperative actually warns them and says, you know, it could be a bit of a worry. Have you wondered what would happen when all of you cosmic anomalies and powers use all your powers at once in the same spot, you know? You know? Unless they all kind of, they're holding back a bit when this series starts. But yeah, you're right. We glossed over the origin. It does come out of Annihilation Conquest. It does come out of the fact that Peter Quill thought there was a need for basically a task force, a galaxy-saving task force, but nobody else did. Nobody else felt as strongly about it as
except
he did. Except for Nova,
who couldn't do anything about it because Nova had to do his own thing.
Because Nova's essentially a Green Lantern. He's a space cop. You know, he's got his own duties to hold to. And so he doesn't actually, the way he pulls together the team, and this is one of the reasons that there's a rift in the team to start with.
Well, it's about the halfway point, actually. Yeah. This is when Bug and that come into it, because a bunch of team members leave because they're pissed off at him.
It's not that far into it, actually. I think it's only about 10 issues in.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which is a little less than halfway.
Well, it's only 25 issues.
he actually, it's found out that he pulled them together by getting one of the...
it's Mantis.
He got Mantis to suggest to them psychically that they'd want to join this team.
So they immediately take this as that they were brainwashed. And he's saying, no, that's not what we did. It was just to implant the idea.
Because I wanted it to happen now, because it was urgent.
That's right.
He said, you really were all going to do it.
He felt that this was something we had to do. And he needed that. And what's interesting, if you go through the backstory of Annihilation, this team was pulled together. It was given to him. They were criminals. They were all in jail at the time. Even Mantis was in jail at the time. And they were basically pulled together to do this strike run in the Kree Empire. And so it's funny that when he finally did, and that's one of the reasons why Bug, who comes into it after that rift, he says, why wasn't I picked for the first team? Because he was in the team in Annihilation. And when he pulled together the Guardians, he wasn't. He was like, why wasn't I picked the first time around? And he says this all the way through.
So that undermines, that starts the Guardians off at a point where the confidence in the team's leader is undermined. So almost all the missions following that is this kind of, there's a little bit of distrust there and a little bit of gung-ho-ness from some of the other members. It's not a cohesive team like the Avengers, you know? It's not like Avengers assemble and off we go. In fact, I don't even know if it's in that series. It's much later on. They actually, towards the end, they're like, Guardians, go! And they go, you know what? The alliteration thing's really not going to work for us. So it's a whole thing of the, and it really is, if you want to look at all of Guardians, the 25 issues, it's one big origin story of a team, which may not necessarily pay off to the team that they originally intended to. And if they kind of capture that in the film, that'll be interesting. I suspect they'll want to keep the team together a bit longer in the film.
I think the film will, because of the nature of the way films work, it will pick one of the scenarios. Because there's several story arcs that happen in that 25 people. So they're going to pick one of those story arcs, and that's what they'll play with. Because in sequels, they can then do other stories.
I suspect that there will be something that causes a rift by the end of Avengers 2.
And that's what's going to pull them together. Yeah. And Kevin Feige, he already has basically talked about the fact that Thanos may actually play a part in Avengers 2 and Guardians. So I would suspect that Avengers, either Guardians will introduce Thanos and then it will be played out in the Avengers 2, or vice versa. One of the two will happen. You know, he is going to come into this in two different ways. And I think, I think if they play this right, if they keep it together, and if they can actually ground it in its own, it doesn't have to be grounded in reality, but it's got to be grounded in its own reality. If they can completely buy into their world,
so that's the thing. You play it straight, and you don't undermine it. I mean, one of the things that was wrong with Green Lantern, which is the nearest comparison in terms of cosmic superhero movies, The problems in that were many. Partly in casting,
the mask, the costume, the effects,
the list goes on. Yeah, but one of the things they did was they didn't have confidence in their own concept, and weren't confident enough with the cosmic stuff. They kept dragging it back to Earth. Yeah. So, like, you know, it wasn't enough that a giant yellow thing was heading towards Earth that was threatening to wipe out everything. They chickened out and said, okay, well, we've actually got to have the more immediate threat of the big-headed guy to Blake Lively.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of caught between those two things. It's kind of like, no, he's a galactic... And
very awkwardly tried to meld them together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the problem with that. The great thing about Guardians, and if they do it where this starts, is that, you know, the space stuff is just taken for granted. You know, and there are characters in there who are, as you say, our... kind of, you know, portal to that world. But we're in there. We're kind of thrown in at the deep end.
It's Star Wars. We're just there.
We're just there, and we just have to accept it because no one stops in the middle of Star Wars and goes, wait a minute. Where's Earth in this scenario? Aren't they going? No. We're just. I mean, you know, Star Wars literally, regardless of what George Lucas says now, literally threw us in at Episode 4 because, as he said at the time, I wanted to create the feeling that we were in the middle of a big space opera that had already been raging on for a while. I didn't want you to, you know, feel as though that this was the origin story. You know, this had been going on. Which is kind of like if you start reading Guardians of the Galaxy, and we're going to say right now, you are going to start reading
Guardians
of the Galaxy. You know.
This is not only absolute must-read material just because it is really good, but it is also must-read because it is directly influencing our cinematic universe now. This is going... Guardians is going to be everywhere. Get in on the ground floor, understand your lore before going into it, and you're going to enjoy the film at that point, you know?
The thing is, like... No, as Kevin Feige said in the thing, no one knew who these people were a couple of years ago. You know, now everybody wants to know who the Guardians are. Get in there. I actually, it's funny because I've always been a DC guy. Coming into the movies, I knew enough about each of the characters to kind of get me by. And you didn't need to know a lot. Like, you know, you learn everything you needed to know about Iron Man in that film.
Yeah.
That's why it was a crossover hit. Thor did a spectacular job of introducing people to that world. And it was the hardest sell.
Yeah.
Now Guardians will be the hardest sell. But I actually feel going into Guardians now, having read these books, it is the superhero film I am most excited about in the next 5 years.
And I've said it before off air, and I'll say it now. If they do this right, and I have a lot of faith in them.
So they haven't got it wrong yet.
They have a proven track record. Mm. If they do this right, this is the Star Wars for the next generation. This is amazing stuff. It's incredibly deep.
And look, you know, sci-fi has been an incredibly tough pull the last couple of years.
Don't think of this as a superhero thing. Think of this as a sci-fi epic.
Because the closest we've had to a good, decent, reasonably decent, big sci-fi film the last couple of years is probably Prometheus.
Which was ultimately disappointing.
Which was ultimately disappointing because it was beholden to something else.
Yeah.
I think Guardians has the edge of originality.
Mm-hmm.
It has the edge of, it's got some of the greatest blockbuster filmmakers of the last decade.
And if they do it right, they don't need to make, in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, they don't need to do crossovers. They don't need to have winks and smiles. They don't need to actually have any of the other Marvel superheroes in it.
Nope.
It's a completely standalone thing. Which they can quite easily cross over at any time that they want.
Well, which is what Marvel's really good at making, with the exception of Iron Man 2, which just decided to go, look, we're going to go balls deep with this thing and actually introduce Nick Fury and Coulson and Black Widow all into that universe as well. All of them have been fairly self-contained films.
With just these little connections, like with Thor, we still have Coulson. You know, it's like we just have these little connections so that we know that they're all linked in some way.
Sometimes it's after the credits, sometimes it's in the film,
absolutely.
But it's always a little thing. But all of those films, if you didn't know anything about those other things, you'd think, okay, that was just a character who turned up. The great thing, and I think that's what they're going to keep going right through to Phase 3, is going to be these... They said they had a plan and they stuck to it, and it sounds like that's what they're going to do with this. It's a really strong story they have got. And it's not like, you know, Iron Man, the Avengers, any of those things where they've got 40, 50 years worth of history and they have to pick a story to know and work out where to start. They have got effectively
A starting point.
A starting point with an origin story and an amazing first arc and an end point. So they've got this almost self-contained thing that they can adapt. And if they get that right, then, as you say, it will be the sci-fi epic of this generation.
It's going to be fantastic. Now, let's talk about one other thing, which is...
Let's talk about Chicks, man.
It is incredibly funny.
Oh, it is hilarious. Let's
talk about the humor in this. I mean, the beautiful thing about this book is that it is this big epic space story and everything else, and then it interjects these moments of humor, little things, like in the first, well, actually throughout the entire thing, but really it's played out mostly in the first couple of issues where it's actually them talking to like a camera, like recording their diaries, right? And they're talking about what has happened, and then we go back in these flashbacks and see what's happening. And I love the fact that even just those are things like Peter Quill talking, you know, Mantis talking, blah, blah, blah. And then we cut to Rocket Raccoons, and it's just the top of his ears because he's below the camera.
The camera doesn't say
and
fixed.
Then we cut to one later on, which is Groot, and all you see is his knees.
Yeah.
You know? Stuff like that. I love that he's giving a diary entry, and all it says is, I am Groot.
Yeah. I love that one of the first diary entries from Cosmo, which is debrief log, Cosmo, head of security, nowhere, uplifted post-canine, man, best friend, is his little description and thing. So Cosmo pressed transfer button, and zoom, off they go. Sometime Cosmo hope to join them and share in fun adventures. That's his log. One of my favorite issues is where they've all aged in different ways as a result of cosmic jump, and Cosmo's become a puppy. And because he's still got the ability to talk and whatnot, he's just running around going, I'd like to fun and play. I like to run around. Would you like to play? And it's great because they have the ability to twist these characters. But because and the reason they can do that is because these characters from page one are so well established. And you know that Abnett and Lanning have like completely thought out the full history, the future history, and everything about these characters.
The only time I think they stumbled on that is, funnily enough, is actually a crossover between two series. It's not within the series, but over two series. Because Groot is actually introduced as the giant walking tree. He's actually introduced in Annihilation. Annihilation Conquest is when they're first falling together. And what's interesting is in Annihilation Conquest, Groot talks. And he actually is having conversation. And he almost seems like kind of pissed off with the whole thing. But he's here anyway and he's doing it. For Guardians, they opted to make him so that he couldn't talk anymore. And he basically just says, I am Groot, which works so much better. So it's like they changed the character structure.
In Annihilators, they go back to this. Annihilators, which is the basically the most recent or the last series that follows it up. They have the new team, which is the Annihilators. But the B story in that is basically the further adventures of Rocket Raccoon and Groot. And the first story is, one of the first stories is Rocket Raccoon going back to Groot's homeworld. To try and find him, where we find out that Groot's not exactly what he's been making out to be.
Because he's been saying he's royalty.
That may not be true. And he is not the only one on the planet who says, I am Groot. it's a great series, actually, because it starts off with Rocket Raccoon working in an office, basically, because the Guardian disbanded. He's got nothing else to do. Someone tries to assassinate him and he quits in spectacular fashion, steals a bit of office stationery, which is this little gadget which runs around, can seemingly do everything, but reminds him constantly, I am property of the Timely Incorporated. You may wish to return me in a timely fashion, and all this sort of thing. He goes, I'll get around to it. But then it just keeps narrating everything. It said, you've set me to exposition mode, of course. So you got that. It's a really funny book, and it's written by the same team. And what I really love about this book, and when you're talking about the humor, is that all the way through is this real awareness of itself. It's aware that it's, like, you know, the guys were aware that they're writing a comic book. And these are actually Dan Abnett, and I'm pretty sure Lanning's the same. They're British authors. So they've got that very particular British sense of humor to this. They started out doing, Doctor Who and comics like and, 2000 AD stuff like that. So they've got that very particular sense of humor. There's actually a character in one of these things called Dread. One of the runs, so there's little references all throughout it too, and I'm sure there's lots of little Easter eggs in there that I didn't pick up on. But the humor just in the dialogue and the way the characters write, because it starts off, particularly after the rift is caused between them, they don't necessarily like each other.
No.
You know, there's you know, little throwaway lines. There's things that, you know, and I think when you were first describing Rocket Raccoon to me, the idea of him being this sort of slightly homicidal raccoon character with guns, you know, comes in and goes, I know what you're going to say. Thank you for turning up with this unfeasibly large cannon.
Well, I
rocket,
love it with Jack Flag, actually. That comes from Jack Flag, where Jack Flag says, what are we going to do now? And Rocket Raccoon says, well, I don't know about you, Jack, but I think you're going to sit there and say, gee, Rocket, I'm glad you have that unfeasibly large cannon. And it's, I love the fact that Jack Flag's all the way through it is kind of like, oh my God. What am I doing here?
I mean, there's creatures in here that are like two shades away from, you know, the xenomorphs from Aliens. You know, there's all these sorts of things. And, you know, it's very consciously so, I think. They told an epic cinematic story in, you know, 26 sequential panel.
I was actually very sad for it to end, quite frankly.
I've been desperately looking around to see what comes after Annihilator's Earthfall. Yeah. I think that's what it's called. Because I don't want this story to end.
I want this team back as well, though. I want Peter Quill, and I want Groot and Rocket and Mantis, because I always felt that there were some, and it's really weird when you talk about comic book characters like this, but I often felt throughout it that there were things not finished. I felt like there was a relationship that was going to happen between Mantis and Peter Quill. Mm. I thought there was always something there. She follows him around for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
And I always felt that there was bits and pieces left out that we hadn't quite got to yet. And it ended. At 25, it actually ends. It says the end in the last panel. Mm. And you go, no, you know, I don't want this to end. You know?
And the thing is, that for the moment, there doesn't seem to be anything more. I think they were under contract to Marvel for a few years so they could finish out their stories. And they also needed to finish out some stories they're doing elsewhere. So it was a non-exclusive contract. Or there was an exclusive contract to Marvel, but it was allowed them to finish up stories they'd started elsewhere. Which was fair, and now seemingly, as of the very end of 2011, beginning of 2012, Annihilation Earthfall finished, which brought to an end basically that run that Abbott and Lanning had since 2006, effectively, from the start of Annihilation through to the end of. So we're talking about a story that they built over the course of 5 years, which really is kind of the sort of stuff that when you think of something like Babylon 5 or something like that, you know, where JMS basically said at the start of it, stay with me for 5 years.
Yeah, bear with me. I got a story.
I got a story for you. And they've kind of done the same thing in comic form.
What worries me as much as, and what slightly worries me though, is the fact that I love Brian Michael Bendis. I mean, I'm a devotee of Brian Michael Bendis. But this isn't his story.
No, it's not his story, and I don't necessarily think it's his style either. He will
get the humor to it though.
He'll get the humor. I don't know about him and cosmic stuff.
No, I don't either. He's much more grounded than
that.
And I worry that bringing back Guardians without these guys is not quite what I want. I want these guys back.
I think they'll be back, because I think if Marvel do the right thing by them, and I don't know what's going on at Marvel at the moment. People seem to be leaving DC in droves, so hopefully, you know, it's Marvel's doing the right thing by their creators. You know, it will be, you know, they'll do the right thing, and if they're going to relaunch this properly, do it with these guys.
Yeah.
Because it's effectively, even though Guardians of the Galaxy existed before them, this is their creation.
Well, and let's not kid ourselves. This Guardians of the Galaxy is not a rehash. It's not a rehash of the original.
It uses
Guardians.
Some of the characters.
Absolutely, but it is a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ball of wax, as they would say.
Yeah.
This is a very distinct story with a very distinct group of characters.
Mm.
And if you thought you knew Guardians from reading the 70s run of Guardians, you don't know Guardians. This is not what this is.
This ain't your daddy's
Guardians.
This
ain't your daddy's Guardians.
Look, people, we could gush about this all day, and we really could. I mean, it'd be great to be able to do this as an issue. I mean, an issue-by-issue breakdown.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually, after talking about it now, I feel like going back and starting all over
again. I will. I'm going to go back to Annihilation, and I'm going to start from there again. Because as you say, there is something about a good book, a good film, when you connect to the characters so much that you actually feel almost a physical loss.
Well, and spoilers. We always talk about spoilers. The last pages of the Thanos Imperative, Peter Quill and Nova apparently die. Mm. And there is actually a memorial in the last of the pages with a statue of them. And I actually got choked up.
Yeah, I thought, absolutely.
How could you have done this to me? Because both of these characters were characters who I had followed through all of this. And I love the Peter Quill character in particular.
Yeah,
I mean, Quill is a fantastic character.
Yeah.
Especially if you go all the way back and start from Annihilation.
Which I'm going to.
He is such a great character from beginning to end. And I want to go back and see if I can find the old Star-Lord stuff now to see what that was all about.
You'll come back next month, and instead of talking about The Dark Knight Returns, we'll just say, no, we actually just went and read this all again.
And read it all again from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And because it is, it's just so compelling. It's like watching Star Wars several times. You know, you want to go and revisit these characters.
And it really is. And I don't think I have connected so much to a group of characters in comics for a long, long time.
Well, not a new group.
Not a new group. And this is because it was completely new to me. So, look, I think this is a must-read, as you say, because it's going to be a keystone of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but also it's just a damn good story. And it's a damn good original story, and there's so few of those left in the Marvel U at the moment because I think everything else has been done. It is a story that's still got 1,000 possible stories to tell, yet while we have 17 different versions of the Avengers out there, we're still yet to... Now, we should say there is Avengers Assemble, and the Guardians have been brought back in some form in that. I've not actually read that yet, so I don't know.
I've glanced through it, and it's not quite the same thing.
Because they seem to have also brought back Thanos in that.
Yeah.
Which, again, spoilers, people.
The problem is I have trouble connecting with Avengers Assemble, quite frankly. Mm. This book feels like it's a nowhere book, and I don't know what it is. It's because it's a book that's trying to capitalize on the films.
It's exactly it.
And I feel like it's out of continuity.
Mm.
It feels really weird because we've got The Avengers, which is still running, and that's a great series by Brian Michael Bendis. And then these Avengers Assemble is running, and I just feel like it's out of step. You know when you feel like something is just not quite lining up right?
The whole idea of Avengers Assemble was to give new readers a book to jump onto if they'd seen the movies and they wanted to read an Avengers book, which is fair enough. Because the other books are fairly daunting to jump onto. This whole Marvel Now thing would have been much better timed around the Avengers or around the Avengers 2.
So I don't know where you stand with the Avengers Assemble. I kind of dip in and out of it because I read it and I go, I kind of feel like this is, you know how there's certain books within the universe.
It ain't our Avengers.
There are certain books out there where you go, it's kind of a fun read, but it's not actually related.
Because the actual Avengers book is really good at the moment.
It is really good. So. And this just feels kind of half-assed, and it feels kind of like... And it's the wrong lineup, because it's the lineup from the movie. It's not the lineup that's currently in the Avengers. And so you sit there going, it all just feels out of step.
Yeah,
you know?
And the Guardians that are in that aren't... Aren't these ones either.
Some they got of them the right names, but they don't... I mean, Peter Quill, for instance, is dressed like Star-Lord again. And you sit there going, it just doesn't quite line up.
So whether it's cosmic stuff that's happening, whether they just sort of sandwiched it in because they just announced, like it literally happened about a month before they announced Guardians at Comic-Con and all that sort of stuff. You can get very cynical about it and probably, you know, rightfully
I'm very cynical about Avengers Assemble, period, as a book. I think the book itself is a book that just needs to go away.
So what we want is Abnett Lanning to come back and write more stories.
Yes, basically.
We can't get enough of this.
We
book.
Need a book called Return of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know,
and reuniting, bringing Peter Quill and Nova out of the Cancerverse and reuniting.
I'm still hoping this is one of the tricks that they've still got up their sleeves that they haven't announced.
Because we didn't actually see Peter Quill and Nova die.
Because
they were trapped in the Cancerverse when it closed.
Yes.
We didn't see them die.
No.
So they are still technically around.
They could be nowhere.
They could be nowhere. Absolutely. So I think what we're going to need is we need them to be brought out of the Cancerverse.
And the other thing is, too, one of the books that got cancelled at the end before Marvel Now launches is the book that they're working on at the moment, which is New Mutants, which frees them up.
Yes.
So I am really, really crossing my fingers and toes on this one, people, because now that David forced me to read this.
Forced you.
No, look, you'd been gushing about this for ages, and I was kind of like, I'll get around to it. And then I think it sort of took us to actually do it on the show for me to read the whole thing. You know, I've of my own free will gone off and read stuff now, independent of this book, because I love it so much, and I really, really understand.
Well, that's what happened with me. I read the 25 issues of Guardians and said, I need to read all the other stuff around it because as much as I love the 25 issues and thought it was an amazing 25 issues, it left me questions.
Mm.
And I wanted to know more about it. And when I started going back and reading Annihilation, for instance, I'm going, oh, so that's why he doesn't have implants. Oh, that's how this team got together. Oh, that's where Mantis came from. Oh, and you start seeing all this, like, pre-knowledge and build up to it. And so, so that was very satisfying for me. But as we said at the beginning, you can read Guardians standalone.
Yes.
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it.
So go and read it.
Yes.
But also read between now and next month. Go and read or reread even Batman The Dark Knight Returns.
And probably a good idea to see the film too.
See the film. The film is excellent. It'll be out by the time, almost, but it'll certainly be out in the States by the time this, almost out in the States by the time this podcast goes out. And it'll be out early October here in Australia. Yep. So read that or read the book first, see the film. We'll come back and we'll talk about both a bit.
First weekend of November, we'll come back. We'll talk about both, mostly the book. But we will touch on the film as well.
So it's been a slightly longer show, but I think justifiably so. We've been away for a while. So think of this as three or four episodes rolling
I kind of suspect that going monthly, the shows will be longer.
And look, you know, we figure if you're still listening at this point, you're okay with that.
Yeah. You're kind of all right with it. Richard, that's been great. So next month will be Dark Knight Returns, as we said, which is, I think, quite frankly, my favorite Frank Miller thing of all time.
I think it is objectively the best thing Frank Miller's ever written.
Yeah, he's written some good stuff, Sin City and so on, but this is a masterpiece.
It is his sort of, like, I mean, he's redefined Daredevil, but this is him redefining Batman, but it's not the Batman we know.
Yes.
And again, we're gonna talk for this for an hour and 43 minutes next month about
absolutely
it.
So on that note, I think we should get out of here. Where can people find more about you?
Me? Well, they can go back and listen to the hour and 43 minutes before this, or the 40 issues behind the panels before this, or they could hit up therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com. Or hit me up on Twitter at DVDBits, although we've been a little quiet on there lately.
Well, this whole hiatus thing, we've all been quiet doing everything. You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at Dave McVeigh. I do occasionally tweet out at the moment, but I've been a bit slacking on it as well, so we will get to that. We will try and be better. We really will. I got content to put up on the site as well. I've been terribly slack.
So if you're missing the weekly shows, you can listen to this four times between now and next month.
Or just listen to it in 25-minute break. Bites.
Bites, absolutely. Or you can listen to three other episodes again.
I think we're waffling now.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here.
See ya.
See ya, everybody.